Brothers, Gallagher Brothers. They got on so well, of course. Oasis, She's Electric, as the time comes round to 7:50, 10 to 8. What the hey? In England, as far as we're concerned. And as one of our midweek drivettes said yesterday, this would be Holly McGrattan. This week, I thought we were having a telephonic link with the Lincoln lot that are in Malaysia at the moment. I'm only following it up because I have a friend there and I completely forgot about the call until the show ended. Well, that was, of course, last night. And if we called last night, Holly, then it would have been like 2 or 3 a.m. in the morning. But thankfully, we've got Molly, we've got Gus, we've got Callum as well. Good afternoon, folks. How are you?
Very good, thank you. How are you?
Marvellous, excellent. Now, is this Gus or is this Callum?
This is Gus.
It is Gus. I thought I recognised those tones, Gus. Now, yesterday, of course, Gus, you were chasing round the almost the entirety of KDU Penang University looking for Malaysian students who just run away, which is it's fine. It's okay. You know, it's just day two, and I appreciate it can be very scary being put in touch with a radio station all those miles away. But is it looking any better today for after the news, for sort of speaking to any Malaysian students, or is it a case of, no, well, we'll try and track some down for next week?
Yeah, it might have to be next week, just because we're at our hotel room right now.
Right. Okay, that's fine. So, here we are, second day. You've hopefully acclimatised. You've had the introductory package and so on. After we sort of wrapped up yesterday, and obviously you attended the speaker series and the variety of other things that I think Toby Wilkinson launched from that, what did the rest of Wednesday have in store for yourself?
Well, we're just kind of trying to get used to the time zone, really, just trying to acclimatise, like you say. It's been pretty chill today. We went to KDU just to kind of meet up again, have a little bit of a briefing. And then we went to the spa inside of our hotel, actually, just to kind of relax. So it's pretty plain sailing here.
Well, I mean, the bottom line, Gus, is you guys as undergraduates and heading into your third year and so on, you work so hard, you need every opportunity to be looked after. It's like Premiership footballers in an academic sense, really. You've got to sort of make use of the spa and work through that. So it's perfectly understandable. It's okay. Now, is it yourself that actually Holly McGrattan knows, or is that a completely different person?
I do. No, yeah, me and Holly are good friends. Yeah.
I thought that was the case, you see. And I mean, obviously, she may drop in this morning, but being kind of, you know, 8 minutes to 8 in the morning, we don't know. We don't know with Molly, with Holly, I should say. She's just doing all sorts of things. Okay, so we talked about how you got there. You're working through that. I see that tomorrow KDU is actually closed because it's a public holiday on Friday.
It is. We don't know why it's a public holiday. We've been trying to figure that out, but we always just seem to get sidetracked with other conversations. It's a public holiday tomorrow. Yeah, we're going to spend it well.
I'm pleased you said that, because, you know, that's one of the sort of challenges we're going to be setting you insofar as why is it a public holiday in Penang, you know, we need to know that sort of fact from that sort of point of view. I don't think it's because they're about to celebrate Mexico Day or something, but who knows. And then, of course, the big work starts over the weekend, because it's the full preparation for the grand event, which, of course, is the sort of focus of why we have University of Lincoln connected with our fantastic partners over at KDU Penang University. It is the student conference.
Yeah, we're really excited for it.
So I mean, given that these things don't just happen, I mean, I'm sure Molly will actually tell you, yeah, conferences, I just do so many of them, it's just easy peasy. In terms of the preparation for it, what kind of things have you been doing so far? Have you met up with the sort of your fellow counterparts from KDU?
We have. We've just been like helping them set up. Just talking to them, you know, finding out more about the actual partnership that's going on between KDU and Lincoln. And also we had Toby Wilkinson deliver a speech on kind of education in the 21st century, which was really interesting, actually. It's good to hear, you know, kind of a familiar mindset and voice. But I know it's been great networking and great talking to people.
And just to remind people, obviously, you know that Molly is reading public relations at the University of Lincoln. Your end subject, is it media production?
Yes, it is, yeah.
That's fine. So what does Callie do then? Would you like to introduce and do a big build-up then for Callie, just ahead of the news? What's their sort of input into the whole thing?
Sorry, do you mean Callum?
Callum, exactly. That's yeah, Callum, Callum. It's, yeah. It's so easily confused, you see. There we are, using pejorative. So let's talk about Callum and what's his backdrop in terms of a bit of background for our listener, please.
So I'm actually on the business management course. There's three of us out here at the time. I'm just going into my third year like everyone else.
Yeah.
Come back off a placement.
Yeah, excellent. Well, it's good to speak to your good self, Callum. Obviously, you do a lot of work in the David Chidiock building. Interesting part of views for the business school and so on. And Callum, we asked both Molly and Gus yesterday how they kind of connected with this. What was your line? For Molly thinking this cannot be real, you know, this has got to be some sort of wind up. But of course, it was. It is, you know, what was your pathway to actually end up taking the spa in Malaysia with obviously some fine folk from the University of Lincoln?
To be honest, when the applications came out, I was actually at work, and, you know, you write the application, you think, well, yeah, why not? And then when you get the acceptance letter, I cannot lie, I was doing wheelies on my office chair in the office, and people were laughing at me because they didn't know what was going on. That sort of, you don't, like Molly said yesterday, you don't quite believe it's real until you actually touch down. But so far, I mean, it's been great. The first day we arrived, I spent the day on the beach, just sort of acclimatising and getting over the jet lag. And, it was just worth sort of getting to know the sort of landscape a bit. We did a bit of travelling on the day. And then yesterday, after we met Toby for the speech, we actually had quite an in-depth conversation with a few of the students. We actually met one Malaysian girl who has just spent the past 3 years at the University of Lincoln, studying for her psychology degree, I believe.
So it all interconnects together. That's the important thing. Well, listen, I've got another sort of little task for you guys to actually do as we sort of look to head up to the news and sort out a few other bits and pieces. We always on a Thursday midweek drive morning edition here at Siren provide a kind of brief account of the weather, and we'll give you the weather forecast for Lincoln today. I'd like you to effectively just, you know, using whatever devices you can, it's just be prepared to actually deal with what's the weather forecast for Penang and Malaysia, and what sort of agonies will you actually be going through over the next few hours, and obviously the free day and various other sort of factors. So that's your little challenge. It's not as challenging as Gus had yesterday to actually go out and about and actually sort of try and hunt down some Malaysian students. We thought, well, keep it real, keep it manageable. We actually have a nice bicycle task for that. So you guys go and sort out a little bit about what the weather is going to be like in Penang. Stay with us, of course. We will be with you again after the news at the top of the hour here, which, of course, is 8 a.m., in case you're wondering. And you're listening to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition on Siren FM, Lincoln's first community radio station, based, of course, at the University of Lincoln, which is all wonderful stuff. Are you ready to actually go? Shall I count you down before you set off for that task? Or have you, I know Molly, she's already probably on the case and saying, I've got the weather forecast here, etc. But are you all ready and set to find the weather forecast? Yeah?
Wait, Googling.
It's gonna happen. Meanwhile, back with Simon and Garfunkel. Absolutely. And the weather for Lincoln, as far as the day is concerned, it's the wonderful September the 21st, 2017. Highs of 17 degrees centigrade, lows of 7 degrees centigrade. It's going to be dry and breezy with a few warm, sunny spells. Now, that's the weather for Lincoln. And normally at this time we actually go to Gibraltar and find out, obviously, the weather in Gibraltar and connect on that basis. But today, of course, we are over in Penang, Malaysia. And I can also introduce to the terrific trio of fine folk that we're speaking to there. That's, of course, Molly, Callum and Gus. Our very own graduate, of course, from the University of Lincoln's English course. That's Shaylee McKenzie.
Hi, guys.
Oh. I think they're still there. Hopefully they haven't run away. I say, yes, this is good. This is fine. It's all right. You see, Molly didn't quite manage to do any studio stuff, you see, so she hasn't quite, before she left, had this whole midweek drive experience. So it's what, where, and yesterday, as indeed we discussed, we could lip read via Skype. We could actually see their lips moving. Couldn't hear anything else at all. So this time around we thought, yeah, day two, the second volume of these connecting links, we would actually go via the telephone, which is good stuff. And I set them the task, Shaley, of coming up with the weather for their own sort of area, which is currently Penang in Malaysia. So who's going to take that? Who's actually sort of coming up with the goods? Is it going to be Gus? Is it going to be Molly? Is it going to be Callum? Who's taking this little challenge?
Yeah, so I'm Callum here. I've had a quick look at the forecast for the next few days.
Yes.
Unfortunately, I'm sad to say that it's actually thunderstorms for the next 2 weeks.
Oh.
With highs of 8 to 29 degrees.
Right.
It's humid,
I think. Yeah. So thunderstorms with highs of 29 degrees. Excellent. Well, you know, it's nice to know that they can celebrate the humidity when they're enjoying their spa.
Prime ministers and presidents may come and go, but the certainty of exemplary entertainment on the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Editions remains.
So, we are continuing our link-up with our people in Penang. I'm sure we'll find a snappier title beforehand. We've got Callum, Gus and Molly, who are actually over there. Let's talk to Gus for a few moments. I mean, in terms of this sort of whole sequence study, today's a free day for you, tomorrow's a free day for you. We were talking about the kind of things you might want to check out, the hike the Turtle Beach, the Monkey Beach Trail, explore the Batu Ferengi area and so on. What's on the agenda for today, guys?
Well, actually, we kind of just kind of chilling in the hotel right now, and then we're actually going to go out to eat to a proper restaurant tonight. Excuse me. So far, we've just eaten like street food, which is amazing. Honestly, it's just gorgeous, and it's cooked right in front of you and ready to eat and steamy hot. But we're actually going to go to a proper, you know, sit down restaurant and treat ourselves tonight. So that's the plan.
Well, it's nice to hear you're not simply sending out for room service, because, you know, I mean, there's always that tendency. I mean, you know, if you're a rock and roll band, if you were, you know, on tour with Beyonce, for instance, you know, I'm sure she'd just send out, you know, she wouldn't necessarily go to the restaurant. And actually, I'm quite surprised that Molly is actually going out in public, because, you know, she's usually mobbed. I mean, I hope you're aware, guys, that when Molly Richardson goes through the streets, normally she has to have at least four or five minders just to sort of fight the fans back. It's just a thought. It's the way it is. Shaley, any questions that you want to put to either Molly, to Gus or to Callum about their current experiences as representative third year students at the University of Lincoln, but they're at the KDU 4th International Student Conference, which of course really kicks off in earnest on Monday the 25th of September and the 26th of September, but they've been there a day or so now. What questions would you like to put to them?
Yeah, what's it like over there?
It's amazing, honestly. We're actually really surprised just by the amount of culture, and it's everyone's friendly. That's probably the biggest takeaway. Everyone's friendly, everyone's really, really nice. There's tons of actually street art all over across the island, and that's always really interesting to see. It's really, really fun to just explore, and it's just great. It's just great.
Oh, I'm glad you're having a good time.
Okay, Molly, would you like to answer the same question? What's your sort of feeling about how it's all? Would you endorse all that?
I love it. I think I'm a big food person, and the food here is just, like Gus was saying, it's just absolutely unbelievable. And the people here are just so lovely and just so excited to see us and just ask about England all the time. That's all they want to know, what England is.
Lincoln's first.
I'm just bursting in. So what's the questions do they ask about England? Is it a case of, do you know Her Majesty the Queen?
Oh, we haven't had one of those yet, have we? I'm sure we will have one.
Because obviously we knew each other so well on that side of things. Do they know about Lincoln? Is it a case of, so how far away from London or Edinburgh is that? I mean, what's the kind of line in terms of Lincoln?
I think they think if they go to Lincoln, they're going to Hogwarts.
Yeah.
It has been sold that if you come here, it looks like they're going to Hogwarts.
Yes.
I feel like they think London's quite close. I think they're just assuming everything's really close to London.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I mean, so a quick Expelliarmus, and we're off and running in all sorts of ways. That's brilliant. Shaylee, have you ever in your global tours, etc., headed off to Penang or Malaysia?
No, I've never been to Malaysia.
Is it on your list of possible things to do?
I think Dubai is above Malaysia.
Really?
So I'd like to go to Dubai first.
Sure, we're working through that. And staying with you, Molly, I mean, obviously an outside meal tonight, accompanied by your minders, obviously. What other sort of things have you got planned for tomorrow, apart from finding out why Malaysia actually has a public holiday?
We're actually up to Monkey Beach tomorrow.
Right.
And then we've just found out there's like a butterfly sanctuary nearby that's meant to be beautiful, so I think we're going to head over there.
Free day tomorrow. It's actually Islamic New Year, we just found out.
It's marvellous. So
it's Yom Kippur next week as well.
The Jewish New Year, the Islamic New Year. Yeah. It's like a multi-faith celebration, on that sort of side of things. Here we're just starting a new academic year, but still, never mind. It's what happens.
Islamic New Year is more important.
Well, yes, we could debate in all sorts of ways about the strategies and things like that. Well, well done for finding that out, because actually they did that with just a matter of moments to go, so I was very impressed with that. Guys, it's been wonderful touching base with yourself, as ever. Now, I'm thinking, obviously, it's a free day today. Are you okay for episode 3 of this series of connections with our people in Penang about same time tomorrow?
If we can find some Wi-Fi, I will get contact with you, Alex.
Okay, that should be fine, because I think that's working well. We'll be here for a kind of little special part. If you've just tuned in, you think, what about yesterday? What about what we've just actually missed, etc.? Don't worry, these are all being loaded up, and in fact, I've already sent Molly, and she's such a social media expert, as you know, that's the whole thing, that she will, I'm sure, put them on Facebook and all the other scenarios, so you can actually have a direct link, which will mean you can listen again. So Gus, you can actually have the joy of actually pointing Holly in the direction of saying, but I've been on Holly, and it was just because you couldn't get up early in the morning that you didn't speak to me yourself, and I'm very sad and disappointed with you, Holly McGrattan, if you wanted to. I mean, obviously.
I'll be doing rubbish. I will.
Yeah, okay, exactly. Because Shaylee's here, you know, Shaylee's made it and she's worked through the whole thing. Holly just hasn't sort of quite managed to get there. Still, never mind.
She's too busy making soup.
Right. Is she a keen soup maker? I mean,
She's got an edible garden event today, so she's probably picking the vegetables to make the soup.
You see, Gus, if you hadn't headed off to Malaysia, you could have actually been part of that edible garden soup-making Holly McGrattan experience.
I mean, I think I'm right decision, personally, but it's good that she's helping out, you know.
It's a tough call, but, you know, somebody's got to do it, so it goes. Gus and Callum and Molly, many thanks indeed. Take care, guys. Have a splendid day. Enjoy and celebrate the Islamic New Year, and indeed enjoy the monkeys and the butterflies. And remember, when a butterfly flaps their wings in Malaysia, it could cause so end of problems here in terms of chaos theory and effects. But never mind. It'll be splendid. A round of applause for our three folk in KDU Penang University doing their stuff. Meanwhile, everything but the girl has emerged. Deserts miss the rain. Now, yesterday's show, that you may recall, in reading the review of David Lynch's Twin Peaks, let's face it, Phil Leonis was not tremendously impressed with that.
He was not impressed at all.
I have a feeling that, with a slight sort of mischief-making hat on, this next stage might actually prove similarly interesting for our ace film critic Richard Fitzwilliams, because I am about to say that in fact one of the best ways of actually seeing David Lean's Lawrence of Arabia is in fact through the little device that I actually have here, which of course is my little pad here. As you can see, there's a wonderful thing there. And what better way than actually seeing a superb sequence of all that desert stuff than actually watching it through, what about sort of a 9-inch screen there, 9 or 10-inch screen? It's wonderful. I mean, you know, a movie that certainly was made for the portable device. Isn't that right, Richard?
I'm afraid that if I may be permitted to suggest a correction.
If only Netflix could have actually got hold of the rights and released on the whole thing, it would have been, you know, far, far superior. But
we are faced at the moment with this debate that was raging at Cannes and will continue to infuriate and indeed cause discussion and debate about whether these movies should be released on Netflix or on a similar
platform.
Should it happen immediately? Should we have film premieres, and should Netflix then pick the movie up and stream it to our homes, or should they wait? And should they wait 3 years, as in France? There was one movie that should be seen on the vast screen with the desert panoramas such an integral part of it. This, of course, was David Lean's classic Lawrence of Arabia, because you have images. I mean, on your mobile, on your iPhone,
yes,
on some device,
device,
shall we say, Sharif Ali's famous...
It's wonderful. He kind of goes through the desert. In fact, that the cinematographer has never used that poor focus again. Although it has to be said, ultimately, wouldn't it have been a much better movie if the original choice of Marlon Brando as opposed to Peter O'Toole had actually portrayed a Lawrence of Arabia?
My answer to that, Marlon Brando and Albert Finney were offered it, apparently.
Yes.
He's seriously considered.
Albert Finney's screen tests alone sets £100,000 back, and that was 1960.
Yeah, that is a lot of money at that time. And I think O'Toole told me himself there were two things that swung it his way. Firstly, David Lean saw him in The Merchant of Venice in Stratford, and apparently Shylock influenced Lean's choice. And the other, oddly enough, which I happened to see the drive-in cinema in South Africa when very young, was the day they robbed the Bank of England, where O'Toole plays a ramrod stiff guards officer who realizes nefarious goings on are happening at the gold and with the various aspects of robbery that are being planned. The extraordinary thing is that Lawrence was so unmilitary. So Lean was undoubtedly a genius. How he could have considered the unmilitary, sloppy Lawrence, who hated uniform, as This was O'Toole. How he would realize that comedian like O'Toole would play the eponymous hero, I mean, an angst-ridden sadomasochist, a flamboyant exhibitionist, capable of both resourcefulness and bloodlust. She's one of the most extraordinary heroes ever, I think, in cinema history, really, because the English officer who led the Arab revolt in the desert during the First World War, I mean, he was a legend before the film, and the film, though preserving Lawrence's, as it were, enigmatic character, there's this question asked throughout the film who he actually is. The ambiguities of the work are also fascinating. Undoubtedly, he's brought Lawrence's legend to, in another half century since the film was made, more than that, and it still lives, it's still debated.
And yet, if Omar Sharif hadn't actually gone to see the Egyptian Prime Minister at the time, the Arab countries would have banned it because they thought it portrayed them in a poor light.
There is absolutely no doubt that the film shows both the duplicity of the imperial powers at the time. Lawrence, of course, in real life declining a knighthood because of the way the Allies, after the First World War, treated the Arabs, but also the diversity amongst, and the lack of unity, at least, amongst the Arabs themselves. In fact, there's a curiosity in this film, as you mentioned, one or two of the stories, was that Anthony Quayle, playing a character who appears initially to be blimpish, Colonel Brighton, initially the British advisor.
Incidentally, Shaley, just interrupting briefly, when Richard used the term blimpish, it's a reference to the life and death of Colonel Blimp, a wonderful character and movie from Powell and Pressburger. Sorry, little notes there.
A blimpish meaning very short-sighted and rather bigoted. But Brighton, interestingly, is the conscience of the film because he realizes Lawrence's worth, and he realizes that he's dealing with somebody extraordinary, rather like he on the British side and Sharif Ali on the Arab side, because it's that you get both the extraordinary, spectacularly magnificent battle sequences and scenes in the desert. Much of the film is set around the attack on Aqaba, which, I mean, if you read Seven Pillars, which I have and much enjoyed, the attack on Aqaba was one very pivotal, but one episode in it. But the film has to choose in its 4-hour running time, and don't let that deter you. It chooses Aqaba.
Well, let's be precise, Richard. It's 3 hours, 46 minutes and 48 seconds.
I think it's actually gone up in its restored version to 3 hours, 58 minutes.
Good heavens.
You have to be, you know...
I'm clearly going to have to get another one for my mobile device here, you know.
I think actually, a trip to the BFI South Bank is precisely what you should be doing. But, I mean, seriously, one of the extraordinary aspects of this film, firstly, there was Robert Bolt's script, Maurice Jarre's musical score. There was unbelievably images that...
You've got Obi-Wan Kenobi in the desert as Prince Faisal, played by Alec Guinness, before he even became Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Well, I mean, the whole cast, Jack Hawkins as General Allenby, Alec Guinness as Prince Faisal, Omar Sharif as Sheriff Ali, Anthony Quinn as Alda Abu Tai, the tribal leader, Jose Ferrer as the Turkish Bey in Dara, and, I mean, Arthur...
However, Richard...
Amazing. I mean, these are often performances that were career bests, or sometimes, as in the case of Sharif, he was never as good subsequently.
Well, I did Dr. Zhivago infinitely better. However, one important politically correct moment, not a single female voice in the entirety of the movie.
Not a voice, no, and I fear that it reflects reality in that respect when it comes to attitudes towards women from the, during the First World War, I mean, that particular area of the world.
In 1962.
I mean, the Arab countries, as you mentioned, didn't like the way they were portrayed, but I fear, again, the reason that an English officer was able to do what he did was the need to unite disparate forces to drive out the Ottoman Empire, and that is, of course, what happened. Of course, the British troops, too. General Allenby, remarkable portrayal by Jack Hawkins. But what you've got here is an experience. It goes far beyond what I would call a normal film, in the sense that so many images, it's so haunting. The musical score, those extraordinary, Lawrence snuffs out a match with his
fingers
and it's synonymous with the rising of the desert sun. That sort of moment is miraculous.
Well, as you've mentioned, a screenplay by Robert Bolt, of course, who went on to do A Man for All Seasons and a whole heap of other good materials, the David Lean direction. Although, arguably, I have to say, from a personal point of view, I think I preferred his more intimate work on Brief Encounter. It got something in your eye.
It's easier now, I mean, if you look at his work on Dickens, too. Yes. So he was such an extraordinary director. I would, if asked, if nailed down to it, you mentioned one British director, the greatest. Lean could do both the intimate and the epic.
And trailing ahead, Richard, I do believe we have spoken in times past and will hopefully in the next couple of months or so, probably even weeks actually, put together a special Culture Shapers piece, which is a series of, an irregular series of programmes we put together, which we actually invite guests to spend about 50 minutes or thereabouts sharing their thoughts on movies that have influenced them or connected together from that point of view. So
I should love to. You mentioned 50, didn't you? Not 15?
I did mention 50, and indeed maybe for you, Richard, we can go to 54, you know?
Oh, so. Exactly. I take it you did admire Lawrence, which I understand is the subtext of your comments.
Well, I was fortunate enough, I think, back in the 80s to see it on the large screen, but it wasn't the currently restored version. But let's find out from Shaylee McKenzie. Shaylee, 1962 movie, still kind of repackaged. You're probably not going to see this at cinemas across the land. It's going to be limited release, but would you make the journey to see it in the large screen as opposed to your portable device?
I feel like definitely, yeah. Just from the trailer, I mean, these are films that my granny has obviously been watching, so I've sort of seen some of them. But no, it looks really good. I think the only thing that would put people off is how long it is.
Just under 4 hours.
It's
longer than Lord of the Rings.
You'd have to have an entire day, basically, to watch it.
I'm wondering from what Alex said, he left an element of mystery here, so I was asking him to clear it up. In 1989, there was a restoration of the print where they discovered some 17 or 18 extra minutes. This was Steven Spielberg was largely responsible for this. And the key was, look for the goggles. There's a scene after the initial motorcycle crash in the opening sequence, which was cut when I saw it in South Africa, where we see Lawrence's goggles hanging from a tree. Once they'd found that, they were able to find the footage, and also then it had lost its sound, and no one knows exactly why it was removed. According to reports, people felt that Lean had to remove a few minutes because of the length. He never admitted doing it, but the facts are that if you see the entire movie, it really is extraordinary. I'm seldom lost for words, but it does haunt you. I mean, this movie I would claim was pure genius, and I think that most best film lists include it somewhere.
Well, particularly interesting, given our little discussion last night about sort of best films. I wonder how many clues Richard would actually take to identify the movie that we said, shall we try? Fiddling in the scores is in one. Editor of SFX magazine, Wayne's Radar, talk about the whole thing. Richard, a movie which, I mean, if I was Lawrence of Arabia, I might possibly turn around and say Sand and Goggles, and you might get it immediately from that. But Mashed Potato, which movie am I referring to? Mashed Potato.
I'm appalling at crosswords.
Okay, Mashed Potato, movie released the year after Star Wars, so we're talking in 1978.
1978. Yes. Now, the answer is I don't know, because it doesn't link with it.
Okay, it'll get easier. François Truffaut.
You're thinking of a film Truffaut made. Is that La Nuit Americaine?
Oh, he's gone off on a slightly different tangent. He's lost the Spielberg tangent. He's forgotten about Dee 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 Dee.
Truffaut,
François Truffaut, Steven Spielberg.
I'm a great admirer.
Mashed Potato.
For and you know, I mean, with the 400 blows or with the green.
Oh, dear.
He's going to kick himself.
He is. This is one of those moments where you have to say, in a movie directed by Steven Spielberg.
Yeah. This is a movie directed by Steven Spielberg.
Yes.
Sorry, I thought you said a movie directed by François Truffaut.
No, I just said François Truffaut. That's all. I didn't say he's directed it. I'm talking about Steven Spielberg and.
Well, you're talking about Close Encounters.
Yes.
That was ambiguous, and I was thinking of Truffaut's movies.
I thought you were off on exactly
Truffaut, and I didn't understand why Spielberg had been mentioned. I didn't see that.
No.
Alex deliberately made him ambiguous.
Oh, well, now that. I can only think the word shame comes to mind.
Oh, well, you know,
I was switching to, because I love Truffaut, and I was trying to think about his movies, and I didn't know why Spielberg had got a mention. In fact, I have to say that you may have a visit from Jaws on land.
Oh, come on now. That's just, dear me. Anyway, that's not dee 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 dee. That's da da.
And that music is quite—it's extraordinary how Jaws has remained as part of the, as it were, more cinema legend, really, in a different way, obviously, to a film like Lawrence. And I mean, that music and the experience of seeing Jaws and the way it affects you when you go onto a beach and you see anything,
Even by Brayford Pool these days. Yeah. Anyway, I think it's fair to say Richard probably came second then. I think he took fewer clues than Richard Edwards, the editor of SFX magazine, but he didn't. I mean, Phil Leonis, just because all we said was mashed potato when he was in there. So, yes.
I have to object because I was.
Richard, let it go. let's move on to Hawkeye, otherwise known as Jeremy Renner, and Elizabeth Olsen, who's an FBI agent in Wind River.
Yes, indeed. Now, one of the joys of cinema is that it can, as you are comfortably seated watching a screen, it convey a sense of, as Lawrence did in a totally different way. So, Wind River, you have the snowy wastes, the vast and impenetrable landscapes, save except to snowmobiles, quite a lot of interesting scenes visually in this movie. It's fascinating, it's occasionally unconvincing, but it captures the harsh and brutalizing confines of a Native American reservation. And I ought to mention that it's directed by Taylor Sheridan, and it's part of a trilogy. Sheridan's work, I think, is of the highest quality, because this trilogy is about the Drugs Cartel in Sicario with Emily Blunt, Hell or High Water with Jeff Bridges, which of course got nominated for Best Picture at the Oscars, and this, and also it climactically mentions a dreadful fact that there are no statistics available, for some amazing reason that can't be explained, for missing Native American women. This movie is an environment where we find Corey Lambert, played by Jeremy Renner, he's a tracker, Renner being a favourite actor of mine, by the way, since The Hurt Locker, which was, in my opinion, one of the best.
Surely Hawkeye and the Avengers or the Bourne series has got to be Jeremy Renner's finest moments.
Jeremy Renner's finest moment was unquestionably in The Hurt Locker for me. I mean, he's done a lot of very, very good work. He's divorced from his wife Wilma, played by Julia Jones, and haunted by the loss of his daughter 3 years ago, and he helps FBI agent Jane Banner, played by Elizabeth Olsen, track down the killers of a girl who's discovered raped and murdered in the snow, but not clad for the outdoors, which makes the murder extremely puzzling. There's the paucity of resources, the harshness of the conditions, and Renner putting in an extremely good performance, although one little mention sometimes, I mean, he's a character deeply, deeply traumatized, but it is quite often difficult to hear what he says. Elizabeth Olsen, she looks gorgeous. She's an FBI agent, if you can believe this. She appears from Las Vegas and hasn't changed her clothes, which is a little bit unusual, I have to say, and involved perhaps in too many situations which are a bit contrived. I have a weak spot for her, I admit it. I am not defending this, but...
All right, All right, Richard, here we are. Let's nail your co-star, Jennifer Lawrence or Elizabeth Olsen. Where are you going? Who? If you've got to choose,
I feel like that's an unfair question.
Jennifer,
you're asking a question in the week after I've seen a Mother.
Yes, exactly.
That is a fair time to answer the question because I'm currently surviving the memory of that.
With
some,
he didn't
film, a really bad film. I mean, frankly. Frankly, I'll answer it next week.
I've heard that Mother is rather disturbing.
No, it should be rather disturbing. It is very disturbing in the initial first half of the film, but then when it goes haywire, what we have is, it's crazy, but it's also very, very bad, in my opinion. Has a high score on Rotten Tomatoes, I know, but the facts are boos and cheers greeted it at Cannes. It divides audiences, but frankly, I think audiences, when they see it, will see or feel that it is rubbish, frankly, in the second half. And I realize I'm talking about a film which is directed by Darren Aronofsky.
If it helps, Richard, Tara Bennett, our film correspondent from the West Coast, also pretty much was disappointed in the whole thing.
Well, frankly, I mean, I was dreadfully disappointed, but also the cast it wastes. You waste Michelle Pfeiffer, Jennifer, I mean, heaven forbid, but to return to Wind River, because one of the aspects of this film I did admire was the way it gives you a sense of the visuals of the icy wilderness, and it also emphasizes the way that Native Americans are so callously sidelined. The chemistry between Renner and Olsen, it never quite takes off, but it is absorbing. So I enjoyed this film because, as I say, it is so unusual, and it is part of it. It is perhaps the weakest of the three, I think, of this trilogy. Hell or High Water was an amazing film. Emily Blunt in Sicario, it's the first scene in that film that continues to haunt me, and not in the way that Lawrence of Arabia haunts, indeed. I have to say, Wind River, I'd recommend, because it's a first-class thriller, but it is a bit flawed, but it's part of a fascinating series of films made by a top-class director who didn't go into the weird and curious, I can only say, byways that Mother ends up in.
It has to be pointed out as well, Shaley, that it was only due to Lawrence of Arabia bursting through the scenario that Richard hasn't been talking about Kingsman.
You're right there, because in fact, in Kingsman's review is in front of me.
There we are, you see. That's going to be next week. That's going to be next week where we see the second. He liked the first Kingsman, not sure whether he could go on the second one.
Yes, the first Kingsman, I thought that it's an absolutely marvellous idea, because although I did feel one very, very serious reservation about it, which was that I thought it was too ultra-violent and also silly at the end, but you had a wonderful idea. Where does it go? No clue.
Well, no, that's just going to wait. Very briefly, Meghan and Harry at Invictus. The Invictus Games, of course, that Prince Harry is responsible for. Yay, go Prince Harry! So much more useful doing those things than getting dressed up in uniforms or taking them off in Las Vegas.
But you see, when that happened in Las Vegas, what happens in Las Vegas
stays, exactly. It's like the studio.
Exactly. The numbers of people, I was very amused at this, the numbers of tourists who were going there, the numbers of inquiries and bookings soared. I mean, people are very fond of Harry, and whereas he was furious about what he considered a press intrusion, quite frankly, he was unwise, because what he does in his set is one thing. Well, to do what he did publicly was not the wisest of moves. But nobody gave a toss. His work for charity is amazing. This is his third Invictus Games for wounded servicemen, and Meghan will unquestionably, according to all the reports we hear, it's not been officially confirmed, of course it wouldn't be, that she will be...
A royal birth and another royal wedding. Oh, what joys!
It would be something that I would love to talk on further, but it would perhaps be...
I think so.
Then we could launch forth. And also, there is an interesting event occurring. I simply mention event because it's a play by James Graham, who did this House, which is about the House of Commons in the 1970s when Labour had a tiny majority and how a government survived. It was very good. It's also directed by one of my favourite directors, who did a fantastic Macbeth with Patrick Stewart, Rupert Gould, it's Inc., and it's about the rise of Rupert Murdoch and how the Sun was launched
by the Dirty Digger himself and Larry Lamb.
Very, very...
Only referred to the Dirty Digger because that's what David Frost refers to him as, which is very entirely.
It's a very well-structured play, this, and completely unsensationally it draws you in because it draws the character so well.
Richard, we've moved from my portable mobile device. I'm not revealing any brand names here. I just thought it was interesting to demonstrate it, and you can actually see Lawrence of Arabia on it. Can't see Wind River.
We have a theme as we perhaps move out, so as to go out, so to speak. That extraordinary theme is also part of cinematic.
Yes, but Shaley, before she leaves herself now to actually start off on all manner of exciting things at a wonderful place called Shop Top, or is it the reverse? I'm never quite sure. Would you like to put those last two questions to Richard, please, Shaley?
Indeed, I will. Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today, Richard?
Well, if you talk about a film like Lawrence of Arabia, how could you not? Oh. Now, I have to again, of course, protest about the clue.
Close Encounters of the Third Kind was a far better movie.
He's still
obviously
mad about that. He
won't let it lie. Much like Phil Lynas and the David Lynch Twin Peaks scenario.
Yeah, definitely.
Well,
touched a nerve.
That's a good start on David's soul, but still.
Can we rely on you for next week, Richard?
Well, undoubtedly, and then we'll find out all about Kingsman.
Oh.
We just had that pause because we needed it for effect, actually. Here's Electric Light Orchestra.
Well, I came a long way to be here today, and I left you so long on this avenue. Here I stand in the strangest land, not knowing what to say or do. As I gaze around at these strangers in town, I guess the only stranger is me. And I wonder,
yes, I wonder,
yes, I wonder,
oh, I wonder,
is this the way life's meant to be? In wonder,
it's your life, it's your life.
Oh, the ground of my feet. Maybe it's just the old street, but everything that I know lies under.
It's your life, it's your life.
And when I see what they've done to the place that was home, shame is all that I feel. Oh, and I wonder,
oh, I wonder,
yes, I wonder.
Thank you.
meant to be. Ooh, I wonder, oh, I wonder, 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 is this the way?
Presumably they're asking a rhetorical question there. Is this the way life's meant to be? I don't know. Let's ask the number one fan of Mike Ashley, the man who's probably even at this moment in time looking to get a full campaign together for the whole citizens of Newcastle to say thank heavens for our saviour and messiah, Mike Ashley, for doing so much for our club that we're now in fourth position in the Premier League. Three straight wins on the trot. You cannot say a harsh word against the man, can you, Ian Lennox?
I certainly can't. I'm sending an anonymous letter as we speak.
There you are, exactly so. And 10 hours ago, of course, we had on your Facebook update, Onward and Upward Durham.
Oh, yes. That's a pet theme of mine at the moment.
Little gem about the glorious chaps who run cricket in this country, an example of their vision and foresight of which we can all be proud. So would you like to share this little story, Ian, and why indeed you used and employed what some people have said is the lowest form of wit to actually sort of, I would say irony, actually, if I say this. I'd say it's more irony as opposed to sort of that sort of point of view. But it was actually an early example, sadly, of racism, really.
Well, I think I've probably made my views perfectly plain to most people who wouldn't listen to them, and a lot of people up here agree with me. That Durham were extremely harshly treated by the cricket authorities because they got into debt, which is partly, a lot of people partly think is the ECB were partly responsible, because they had a policy of trying to promote cricket test grounds all over the country, which led to some disastrous results, apparently, and Durham fell into debt. And as a consequence, the cricket board relegated them, fined them 46 points, I think it was, in the championship, which meant they had absolutely no chance of regaining promotion. And then there were other penalties. There was a wage cap, I think, until they... and the thing was actually draconian. And the consequence of that is now that Durham... there are apparently agents swarming around Durham trying to pick up the best players because they can offer them higher wages at their clubs.
But Ian, let's get a couple of things straight here. Just as Middlesbrough Football Club had points deducted a few years ago for fielding apparently ineligible players,
yes, the fact 46 that points they weren't relegated.
They were indeed relegated in the
20 odd years ago.
Yes,
yes.
And you need to bear in mind that there's something to be said for the North-South divide, that folks sometimes in the organisations in the South don't necessarily look upon the organisations in the North with any kind of real friendliness. You know, it's a fact of life. Yeah. So,
but the fact is, Middlesbrough didn't provide just about a third of the England cricket team in the last 10 years.
Well, it would have been interesting if they had, wouldn't it? Because obviously they would have had the wrong kind of ball. But
well,
still.
All right, but you know what I mean.
But I think the motto is the same. And we were talking about your little line here, actually, is referring to the individual called K.S. Aranjitsinghe, I believe, who had a little...
Oh, yes, he was an Indian
university.
Prince. Yes. It was the 1890s, but racism was quite rife in England at the time. And he went to Cambridge University, and because of his colour, he couldn't initially get a game. So he was a very wealthy man, obviously, so he hired the best bowlers in England to bowl to him in the nets. I employed them as servants. And anyway, he eventually got a place at Cambridge, got his blue, and became an England player. But before he became an England player, one of the great grandees of England questioned his eligibility. Obviously he was Indian, you know, today it wouldn't be any problem. But there was a big debate sprang up, and one of the people who supported him was warned by an MCC member that he would try to get him expelled because he was supporting a black man. If you think about that, for him to say that, for him to assume that he had support among other members, which he obviously did have, it just showed the state of affairs among the grandees of English cricket at the time. So I just my basic point I was trying to make is that the world has moved on, but it's been despite or because of the people running cricket,
and
who fought a campaign against anything beyond the status quo. because they were terrified that cricket was going to go down the road of football.
I mean, it's almost the kind of thing which would actually have Mel Brooks writing a comedy about it if it wasn't going to be politically incorrect. So, you know, what can I say? This is just a matter of life. Let's move on, Ian, because, I mean, I could wax lyrical about West Bromwich Albion, thankfully losing 2-1 yesterday to the only side from Manchester. As you appreciate, oh, they conceded a goal. Yes, because we had Bravo in goal. I say no more. It's just, you know...
Are you going to blame everything that happens? Or is it just...
Look, the fact of the matter
is... It's like a Pavlovian reaction. Manchester City... centre-half, misses header, ball goes over the line, goalkeeper's lying on the ground injured. It's his fault.
If it's Bravo, I'm afraid. You know, in the Edison...
This is not like you, Norman.
Edison normally, you know, no worries at all. Put Bravo in, you more or less guarantee the opposition at least one goal.
But was it? I mean, have you seen the goal? Was he at fault?
Look, I'm not going to even comment on that. Just let it go. He's obviously very fortunate.
What do you mean let it go? You raised it.
Well, let's move on to the best comebacks.
I'll let you off this one this time, but not again.
I should hope so. The United Kingdom's best comebacks have been revealed. I'm still waiting for you yourself, Ian, to actually come back on this line, see what you did there. Apparently, Kevin O'Sullivan, who's a journalist and TV pundit who'll be joining us in the next part of the programme, has revealed that Take That has been voted best music comeback. Well, Sue Royce would be very delighted with that. Doctor Who was best television show comeback.
Yes.
ABBA are voted the acts that we most want to see make a comeback. And what do you think, Ian, was the car that was voted, this is the car we would most like to see a comeback? What do you think it might have been?
Was it the James Bond car?
No, it was the Ford Capri.
Oh, right.
Exactly. The Ford Capri people actually would like to see make a comeback as far as things are concerned. I mean, did you ever drive a Ford Capri?
Never.
And if you want the top three for if you could bring back any one iconic car, they were, obviously, number one, the Ford Capri. Number two, the Morris Minor.
Yes.
Yeah.
I had a friend who had a Morris Minor, yes. It was a very reliable little car, that.
Exactly. They're very, very good.
A bit like a tank, I think, from them.
Unlike a Volkswagen, but, you know, not quite as
bulky in the Volkswagen.
Exactly. And number three, the DeLorean, which I believe is actually likely to have some more comebacks. It's all Back to the Future, really, with DeLorean.
Wasn't that the car that was involved in a great factory scandal?
Yes.
It was a huge...
It didn't help matters. It was a bit of a challenge, really, but still, there we are.
Was it American or Canadian who came over?
I think it was a mixture of American, Canadian, I think there was some Irish input as well. It was very strange, really, but the DeLorean. It used to have those wings that lifted up from either side, a bit like the old classic UFO cars used to have, where you didn't actually open the door normally, they kind of raised, like side wings. And film that was made the best comeback, in other words, best remake, Batman was in third position, Beauty and the Beast was in second position, and Star Wars... it is apparently the film that's made the best comeback. Maybe we should actually get you on the case of making a remake of Lawrence of Arabia. That would tie in all sorts of things. It has to be done.
Oh, yes, that was good.
Oh, yeah, it's been re-released.
But do you want remakes of films? Because usually they're a lot worse than the original.
Yeah, well, that's true, but then you see Cecil B. DeMille remade The Ten Commandments.
Somebody remade Get Carter as well.
Oh, please, don't... You see, again, that's as bad as putting Bravo in goal for Manchester City. It's just, you know, you don't... Sylvester Stallone, great as Rocky, acceptable in the Rambo movies, but not in Get Carter. Please, it's just not appropriate. It's not there.
He met his match.
It's a different movie. You know, just is there a Carter in the house? It's these sort of things. So the soundtrack, everything. Just
and there's the other one, the other great. What was this called? The plot to kill President de Gaulle.
Yes. Day of the Jackal.
Americans got their hands on that one as
Don't
well.
Talk about Day of the Jackal.
Day of the Jackal, yes. It was good called Jackal, this one.
Yeah, exactly. It's just ease it back, just let it go.
Set into an American scenario, I think. And
they've already had one in America. It was called the assassination of President Kennedy in 1963, so don't go there. You know? Anyway.
But do you know the day, interesting, the Day of the Jackal was rejected by a number of publishers on the grounds that the reader would know that the attempt to assassinate President de Gaulle must fail.
Mm. Well, in the same way as actually, you really know the end of the story with Titanic. You know, the boat is going to sink. Sorry.
Yeah, but providing the story's strong enough and the interaction of the characters and the Day of the Jackal was being used as one of the best examples of a concentric plot where the the three or four people who haven't seen it or read it. I think it's one of Forsyth's, I think it's probably Forsyth's best book, actually.
That's an interesting one. Sure, that's from one author to another. Thumbs up for Dale Jackal from Freddie Forsyth. Wonderful. Ian, how are Oboe and Ollie?
They're okay. Yes, they've been had a dreadful day yesterday. I've got to get their flea medication. I got a prescription, and Oboe chose that day to go missing.
Oh.
For a considerable length of time. So instead of making one trip, I'd make two trips. And I only live about half a mile from the, well, less than that, actually, about 500-600 yards from the vet. I had to carry them down both twice. You don't realise that these pet carriers, you've got them to hold them away from your hips. Therefore, it's not a natural carrying position.
Nope.
And it really does hurt your arm.
Ian, I thought you had servants to actually do that sort of thing for you.
Not anymore.
Have you not got some Sunderland fans?
I've had a sack of servants.
Yes, actually, get some Sunderland fans in the case.
They burned the bacon twice, 2 days running, so along with it.
If we took a trip back in time to September 21st, 2015, we would find that on one of his last few days in Canada, Ian was sitting reading in the garden when a sparrow flew in through the open door into the house. Ian went inside to try to usher it out, but the poor thing flew like a dart into the window. It was stunned, and Ian gratefully carried it out and placed it in the seed tray. Didn't think it would survive, but after 20 minutes, it lived!
Yes, it flew off, yes.
Exactly. That's the kind of classic that I think, when you've completed your current amazing opus on the life and times of a wonderful security guard and officer, etc., then I think we need to have the story of the sparrow and what happened next. Splendid.
Right. Do you want me to tell you now, or do you...
Well, again, it's interesting that sparrow clearly had bonded with you, because, you know...
I don't know whether it was the same one, but the next day I was sitting reading in the garden, and there's a little exactly the same species flew onto my knee, and then onto my Kindle.
Extraordinary.
And it looked at me for about 8 inches from my face, and it just looked at me, and I went, wow, and it just flew off. Now, I like to think it was the same sparrow.
And I'm sure you were absolutely right. It probably was. And on that amazing piece of wonderful live wildlife news, with the time coming around to 3 minutes to 9 o'clock, after having been from Penang in Malaysia through to Richard Fitzwilliams and Lawrence of Arabia over to Ian Lennox, we'll be coming up to Best Comebacks of the Year. The importance of crying. Emma Kenny and Nilo Kane will be saying why it is important to have a good cry.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that.
That's important. We've got Maddie Moat, TV presenter, talking about teaching science in school. In case you're wondering, Ian, the reason that we have a dearth of midweek drivettes, well, one of them, Tessa Snart, has been celebrating her birthday, so I think it's just a party time. So,
which one?
That would be Tessa, from Gunter.
Oh, is that Tessa Leanne Snart, isn't it?
That's exactly so, yes.
Oh, well, wish her a really happy...
You can wish her it yourself, basically. She might be listening to this, she may not be, but, you know, at least the message is there. You know, we did
right.
That, so that's good. Ian, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Yes, I have.
Are you back with us at the same time next week?
I do hope so.
Excellent. Will you be bringing the sparrow and the cats? See what we did there? Yeah, it's
I was walking down the gossips a couple of days ago, and I passed this hedge, and there was what's called a sparrow hedge, I think. There must have been 100 of them, all chirping away at the same time.
My word.
And I thought, that's why blokes call women birds.
And
they all talk at once, but you understand what they're saying.
I don't think that's politically correct, Ian. I was saying they're probably saying, look, it's Ian Lennox.
Mel Brooks on this.
It's Ian Lennox. He looks after our fellow sparrows in Canada. That's probably what they were saying. You know, it translates.
The Andronicles of the bird man.
Speak sparrow. Ian, we'll see you next week.
Okay.